45 metres back. Bernard Foley's
got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Mitch. Joined with me this week, as ever, is Lockie. Lockie, how are you, mate?
Mitch, I'm good. I'm also in mourning. I've suffered through two gut-wrenching sevens medal losses, the men going down to the bronze in Singapore, and then the ladies getting dusted at the death by the Kiwis, 31-21. Broken hearts, TV remotes thrown at the wall. It's all been happening in our patch. Mitch, how about you, mate? What's going on?
Yeah, I've lost so much rugby over the weekend. Sevens, we've had the under-20s that you're in camp for. We've had Super Rugby. I mean, we'll talk through all of that a little bit later. But you must be ecstatic, Lockie. The Reds have got up against the Crusaders for the first time in however many years. Incredible performance there.
25 years, 3 months, and 182 days. Not that we're counting, Mitch. Not that we're counting. But it's been a huge get for us. I've no idea if the days and months are right, but it was awesome to see the Drop Bears get one over the Crusaders for the first time since 1999. It's been awesome. But Mitch, we've buried the lead a bit here because it's not just the two of us on today.
We do. We have a guest joining us all the way from Western Australia, our resident Western Force fan, Simo. Welcome to the pod, mate.
Hey, boys. How you doing?
Very good. Now, you've got one of the hardest jobs of the podcast this week, trying to salvage what was the Western Force's performance against the Chiefs and focus on any form of positive from that. What did you, how did you find the rugby this weekend?
Look, it's tough as always as a Western Force fan. You know, you try and get enthusiastic every single week, but you mentally prepare for the worst. Although I did have a long night in bed staring at my ceiling, trying to find some form of positive within the whole ordeal. And I think I might have found one. It's a bit of a stretch, but we'll see how I go.
Fantastic. Very much looking forward to hearing what that is a little bit later in the podcast. Now, before we dive into the rugby content, one bit of news that has broken this afternoon or this evening, depending on where in Australia you are located. The news is that the Western Force have confirmed the signing of Darcy Swain for the next few years. Simo, that must be a massive signing that you must be stoked to have a player of that caliber coming across to the West.
You know, it depends on when in the timeline you ask me. Currently, we're back onto the Swain. We're a big fan of him. He's doing well. I do think his mongrel is going to be something that the Western Force we enjoy having, just bringing that physicality up the front. Once more, as long as he can keep his cool going, I think we'll be pretty happy. But pretty rough for the Brumbies, from him going from captain to abandoning ship a little bit, coming to the Western Force. Hopefully he learns how to swim, because our ship has sunken.
It's very much the Western Force are very, very quickly becoming the Brumbies, almost not bogey team, but taking some of their better players and signing them, with Nick White coming across this year, now Darcy Swain. It's only a few years before Noel Alessio signs with the men in blue and comes across to the West as well.
I think it's mirroring the beginning. Didn't we take Giddo and a few handy signings quite early on? So,
that's true.
You know, we're just trying to find maybe some of the success from the earlier seasons by just rummaging through whatever we can find in the Brumbies closet.
Well, we do have a lot of rugby to get through. So before we dive into the actual rugby content, a bit of an update. It has been a few weeks since we've been able to get a Sunday night podcast out. So an update on our tipping comp. So well done to Nick Wilson, or Wilson's Warriors, who's still up top and has been for as long as I can remember from the tipping comp. He's in first place on 49 points. We have a new second place entry into the top three. We have Leanne T or Misty Yike 232 on 47 points. And in third place, we have Jeremy S or Supersonic 24 on 46 points. So well done to all three of those players, respectively. Simo, are you in our tipping comp? And if you are, do you know where in the...
Oh, I must confess, I am
50 so people.
I'm not a part of this this season's tipping comp. I missed the boat very early on. I pulled a Lockie, forgot to get into it, and from there I decided I was not going to attempt to make my way up the ladder. I'm also running our fantasy comp, so I've got enough things I'm trying to get out. So no tipping comp for me. Yes.
Yeah, you are. You're in two fantasy comps. And how are you finding the pick and drive fantasy at the moment? How are you faring in that ladder?
I'm sitting quite central on it. You know, it's actually quite difficult running the two fantasy comps because a player comes up and you think, oh, yeah, this is the one that I want for this team, but it's actually for the other one, and it all becomes a bit confusing. As a result, I'm sitting dead center in both of them, but doing all the hard work of putting all the points together. So you're all welcome.
I can definitely say from our group of players, we thank you for the effort that you put in each week of getting our scores up and combining the scores every week. So without people like you, the comps do not go ahead. So we do send a big thank you for that. We will get into the content now. So what we're going to focus on tonight, we've had so much rugby action over the weekend. We've had the sevens that have just finished up mere minutes ago before we hit record. So we'll chat through a little bit of that. We'll chat through the under-20s rugby championship that took place on Thursday night. Then we'll dive through round 11 of Super Rugby Pacific. And if we have time, we might look forward to round 12 and do a few quick tips at the end of it. I think we've probably gone a little bit long for the intro, so why don't we get into the rugby action? Let's go.
Let's go.
All right, let's get into the rugby action for this week. Now we have this, I nearly said Sydney Sevens, but no, it's the Singapore Sevens that was played over the weekend. It has finished up, well, as we currently record, the final is being played. Lockie, do you have an update on the score of the final? The men's final, I should say?
I do. Oh, the men's final. Good question. I have to admit, I don't care because Australia's not in the men's final. But what we did have was some devastating stuff go down in the women's final. We did lose 31-21 to New Zealand. Michaela Blyde, another hat trick because she's just a weapon. And a bit of an injury update. We had Maddie Ashby go down with what looks like a suspected ACL. So could be big ramifications heading into Paris Olympics and the final in Madrid. But credit to the Black Ferns, they take out the unofficial minor premiership of the Sevens women. And I think it was the RGs who finished on top of the World Series heading into Madrid. So up the Pumas there, very exciting for them. It's their first gong. And it heads into a pretty interesting deal with the Sevens where they do the sort of a final series in Madrid that goes for an overall title. And then you've got Paris as well. So this is the first step in, I guess, a lot of bigger rewards to come. So I'd rather drop this one for the Aussies. But men, really understaffed. No Maurice Longbottom, no Josh Turner, no Jimmy the Jet, no Matt Gonzalez. They lost another one to injury as well throughout the tournament. And Michael Hooper had to get through a lot of work and got shown up a little bit defensively playing out of position as well. So lots of things to work on for the Aussie men, and the Aussie women will just have to wait and see because they were without Charlotte Kaslik. They were without Shani Smale as well. So I don't think that's a proper indication of what we're going to see in Madrid. So sevens-wise, we'll just bury that one and we'll pick it up again in Spain in a couple of weeks.
So did the Aussie men make the Madrid final series for the sevens?
Yes, so we've qualified for the final series. We finished up fourth in Singapore, and I think we finished up fifth overall. I have to have a double check, but a couple of highlights out of this one. Michael Hooper did get his first try, got over during the pool stages as well, which was great to see. And if you want to go back and watch any of the games during this one, the men's quarterfinal against South Africa was an outrageous game. The lads are up by 3 tries with about 3 minutes to play. Blitzbox forced it to extra time. And then Big Moose, Nick Maloof, scores in overtime to win that one. So there were some cracking encounters through it. Go back and watch if you've got your stands and get around the sevens, because we've got a massive couple of months coming up heading into the Olympics.
Now, Lockie, this is a bit of a left field question before we get into some under-20 stuff, but Michael Hooper has played, fairly, as you said, fairly big minutes in this tournament and played, I think this, what is his second or third tournament in the series. Do you think he's shown enough to John Menenti to go to Paris at this point?
I think you've got to take him to Madrid just to find out, because two tournaments isn't enough for me. Yeah. You got Hong Kong where he started. Everyone's talking about how good he was over the ball, but we've known he's been good over the ball for a decade, right? Like, he's Michael Hooper. That's nothing new. So it's whether he can, you know, cover those big distances in defense. You know, how's his lateral work? Has he got the engine? You know, he had a great engine for 15s, but are we going to see him be able to play big minutes in sevens? So those are the questions that need answering, and Madrid's probably the good place to do it rather than risk it at Paris. So I think that's make or break for him.
Yeah, really excited to see what he can do in Madrid. And hopefully for all of Australian rugby, we do get to see him make that Olympic squad, because that would just be such a great story to end his career for such a dedicated servant of the game. Now, we do have so much rugby to chat through. The next tournament to focus on is the Under-20s Rugby Championship that kicked off on Thursday night. Lockie, you are currently in camp with the Australian team. We'll focus on the Australian game first. 6-25 to Argentina was the final score in that one. Horrendous conditions for anyone that saw it. We spoke earlier in the year around the, I think it was Fiji and Drua and maybe the Melbourne Rebels or the Western Force, one of those two games, and it was belting down. There was puddles everywhere. We were fearing for guys' lives going into rucks and potentially drowning. Not much better in the Sunshine Coast on Thursday night.
Sunshine Coast is a bit of an oversell as far as the name after that. It was some of the worst footy conditions I think I've ever seen. It was literally raining sideways at some points, puddles ankle deep and deeper. And a few of the boys afterwards chatting mentioned that, you know, when you're at the bottom of a ruck there, you're not sure whether you're going to make it out. It was seriously treacherous at times. But yeah, just, you know, awful conditions going down 6:25. We kicked two of our three penalties, but the RG's scrum was rewarded at that point. I'm not sure how much dominance they were getting, but tell you what, they're a hell of a pack. Like, the size of that Argentine pack was massive. So they got on the right side of the ref, forced five scrum penalties at the end of the day, and that laid the platform for them to go up 3-0. So we get a chance to bounce back now. We're up against South Africa on Tuesday night. So keep your eyes and ears out for that one. And then against New Zealand on the Sunday. So a couple of games to get back. And it's all still up for grabs because it's three games. Whoever's top of the table at the end of it goes through. And South Africa and New Zealand played out a 13-all draw in their first game. So still wide open. RGs have their noses in front for now. But it's pretty interesting tournament. And Simo, I'm not sure how much of a chance you've got to tune in, but there's some pretty amazing talents coming up across all four countries in the 20 space.
Yeah, I haven't had much of a chance to actually follow through. And I did help on the little plug here on the Discord by promoting it. But I didn't actually catch too much of the games. But I do think, as you're saying, excellent talent on display. I think it's a bit of time to catch up. And I mean, this is obviously develop some revenue, hopefully, which is something we need, but also eyes on younger players. Kind of important. It's just to have those stories and we'll develop and have something to get excited for in the future.
And what was really 100%. Great to see as well was the amount of people that actually showed up and supported both games. So even the first earlier game, it kicked off about 5 o'clock on Thursday afternoon between All Blacks and South Africa under 20s. Pretty healthy crowd there, and it sort of just built throughout the night as more people finished work and were able to get there to support the Australians. So a really great initiative to see that they're playing these double headers, a condensed format, and that people are supporting it. So it's all played. Is it all played at the exact same stadium for the next week, Lockie? Yeah. So if you are in the Sunshine Coast and you haven't had a chance to actually get there on Thursday and support the boys, two more chances to do that. As Lockie said, South Africa coming up on Tuesday and then the All Blacks, what, Thursday later in the week?
On Sunday. So we'll finish up on Sunday with a couple of Arvo games. So if you've got family and you're up sort of Queensland way, Southeast Queensland, bring them on up, get a doubleheader in, a game at 1 o'clock, a game at 3 o'clock. Great way to spend your Sunday.
Fantastic. And hopefully the boys can take a lot of positives out of what the first chance to play in a new tournament like this. Maybe brush it to the side, put it down to the wet weather and just focus on South Africa, because as good as the Pumas were, the Springboks and All Blacks looked like they had areas that they could be exploited as well. So they didn't look miles and miles ahead of what the Australian team put out. So it is a bit of an unflattering scoreline, but there are positives that we can focus on moving forward, which is great. So make sure you're tuning into those games on Stan. The minis and the highlights are there as well. So make sure you're getting in and watching that. But we've spoken enough about other things. Let's get into what everyone actually cares about, which is Super Rugby Pacific. We had round 11 over the weekend. We started off on Friday night with the Hurricanes and the Waratahs. 41-12 was the final score in this one. As the resident Waratahs fan, we will keep this as brief as possible because really, in terms of positives, there were none. Boys, did either of you get any opportunity to see this game? What were your sort of general thoughts?
Simo, you jump in, mate.
All right, I'll hop in here first here. So a little bit difficult viewing time for us over in the West. Kickoff is around 3 p.m. for us. So I was in the middle of grading my year 10 English work at the time. And as I said before, if they got some bad grades, probably know the reason why, because I had this game on at the same time. There was a few things that we can pull out in terms of highlights, but I wouldn't say they're Australian focused. We had Perenara taking the all-time try record with 63 with Julian Savea just behind him. And the rest is quite negative. I don't know if you want me to go through this to make it for you, Mitch, but it was the Waratahs' worst loss to the Hurricanes since 2001. Yes. And it also continues a 9-year streak for the Hurricanes in South Wales. So there's a few things of what's going on there for those boys. As much focus as I can lump on the light blue and the color blue,
I think one of the most damning stats out of this game was something that came up maybe 25 minutes into it. Into the first half was a stat that the broadcaster put on that said that the likelihood of both teams making finals from the result of this game, or maybe I think it was just actually the Waratahs, if they won, they were a 28% chance of making the 8. If they lost, they were a 6% chance of making the 8. And surely the coaching staff knew that coming into this game, but the way that they showed up, the way that they started the game and the first 15 minutes, you would not know that this team was fighting for their season. They were lackluster. They were switched off. They just didn't have any urgency about any facet of the game. It was really concerning as a Waratahs fan to watch them just completely outclassed in all areas and just didn't know what to do. And they didn't look like they had any urgency to try and get themselves back into the game or back ahead on the scoreline. Lockie, am I being too harsh as a bit of a passionate Waratahs fan, or is it just really dire scenes from the boys in blue?
Look, it's pretty dire, but you've also got to look at how many players you've lost to injury, particularly up front. We know that the Hurricanes are one of the best set-piece operators in the competition so far, particularly at scrum time. They've got real depth in their front row. And I'm just going to quickly flip it and show you how many injured front rowers the Tars have at the moment. You've got Dave Parecki with the Achilles, Tom Lambert with a knee, Archer Holtz with a shoulder, Daniel Bolter with an Achilles, Maihi Vailanu's out for the season with a knee, Angus Bell's out with a toe, Theo Farese out with a foot, and Tom Ross isn't back till round 15. So you have 8 regular starters, or not even starters at that point. You have 8 down to fringe players who are all out and you're pulling from club. It's a ridiculous run of injury. So you've only got Harry Johnson-Holmes and Hayden Thompson-Stringer, who are frontline operators in that side. I don't know how you're supposed to have a scrum when you've lost that many. So I think you've got reasons to struggle, but it's not looking like the year of the Tar anymore, I've got to be honest, Mitch.
No, it's not looking good. But there is, and I do have to shout out, Nick Wilson on our Discord server highlighted very well in the chat around this game that is everyone's talking about how the Waratahs don't have a front row, don't have a forward pack. The players that they had in and out, Ned Hannigan wasn't featured this week as he was last week, and he was such an important player for them. But we had 4 Wallabies and an international sevens player in the back line. And there are super rugby clubs across this country that are performing a lot better without that level of representation. So as much as we say that the Waratahs forward pack's going backwards, the back line isn't functioning well either, considering the caliber of player that they have and the experience that they have as well. So, I mean, it's frustrating, and we might leave it there for the Waratahs. A lot of soul searching for them these next few weeks. They go to Perth this next weekend, Simo, so I'm sure you guys are looking forward to matching up against the Waratahs and maybe getting an easy win.
Oh, blue on blue, the battle for the wooden spoon. We'll see how we come out on top or on the bottom. But either way, it's not necessarily a position you want to find yourselves in for either side here. Isn't. I think Australian rugby is the loser at the end of the day anyway.
Very well said. Well, let's keep moving. And so the other game on Friday night was the Melbourne Rebels hosting the Auckland Blues. 11-38 was the final score in this one to the Blues. Now, this is a bit of a funny game. We talk in cliches a lot on this podcast around game of two halves. But really, this one is a game of two halves. 11-12, I think it was, at halftime. The Blues went on to score all of their points in the second half, and the Rebels just fell to pieces. Lockie, what were your thoughts around the performance of the Rebels in the first 40 minutes compared to what they put in the second 40?
Oh, chalk and cheese. Complete chalk and cheese. I thought they were really quick around the ruck, and they got quick ball off Ryan Lowry, so I thought directed traffic nicely early doors. Simple things like taking the points were on when they're on offer. We're seeing a lot of teams sort of try and plug the corner and press for the seven-pointers all the time, particularly the Kiwis. But I really like the way that the Rebels managed the first half. And it was really up until PJ Sheck got over that the cracks started appearing. I think that points more to a mental fragility around the Rebels at the moment rather than a skill deficit or a lack of cohesion on the field. I just think psychologically seeing them lose and go down at halftime, promptly followed by Mark Talair just doing Mark Talair things shortly after halftime, I just don't think there's that resilience in the Rebels against those Kiwi sides. You know, we saw them go three on the bounce a couple of weeks ago, but they're all against teams well below them on the table when they're up against, you know, a top four side like the Blues, who are genuine contenders. I don't think they believe at the end of the day that they're actually in a position to win these games, and that we saw that fall away because the Blues just ended up ripping through them, Simo.
You know, I'd actually like to argue on one of your points there when you're saying you didn't think that they showed resilience. I found that they actually had quite a lot of resilience. It's actually quite sad that this team's not really going to stick together. I mean, we've had the news coming through that it's looking like they're going to be saved, but I think there's a lot of players already, as we know, jumping ship or potentially been looking elsewhere whenever a franchise is going down and gets a last-second save. I'm sure players are starting to question how much or the longevity of the save that's coming through, because I do see that the Rebels have such an opportunity to click. They have such a great lineup across the board. I actually felt that every single time the Blues managed to capitalize, it was on some dumb error. I mean, we can point to the Gibbon scrum penalty just 5 meters out, which was just unnecessary. We had the pick and drives where Tupou was coming through and the boys just weren't following them. There was a lot of momentum in the Rebels' way, and the Blues managed to absorb a lot of it. And what you found was the pressure just heaping on the Rebels and then them making a small error that the Blues managed to capitalize on. But I felt that every single time that happened, they didn't get their heads down. They kept fighting. It was just too much of a pressure cooker. And every time the valve blew, the Blues would manage to capitalize. But I was actually quite impressed with the Rebels for the most part.
Give it to us, Mitch. Is it the Blues are good or the Rebels not good?
Well, if you look at some of the stats that come out of this game, you would expect the scoreline to perhaps be reversed, which goes to show, I think, the inefficiency of the Rebels to finish off the opportunities that they set themselves up for. So if we just look at some of the attacking stats, in terms of carries, the Rebels had 151 to 140. They made 940 meters to the Blues, 879. They had 6 line breaks to 4 line breaks. So in those key attacking stats there, the Rebels come up ahead to the Blues. But what is evident is that the Blues are able to actually capitalize and finish off their entries into the 22, which is where the Rebels currently are falling away. They had multiple opportunities in that second 40 to get within scoring distance, get into the Blues A zone and get really close to the try line. And they ended up turning it over, or the Blues were able to counterattack and steal at the breakdown. So if the Rebels are able to actually capitalize on those opportunities and actually score the 7 points or the 5 points that they're setting themselves up to, they're much closer in this fight and the scoreline doesn't get away from them, which it did.
I don't think the Blues are going to be necessarily happy with this as an outcome. I mean, it is a little bit flattering, the scoreline for them, as there was 2 converted tries in the last 5 minutes. But at that point, until the 74th minute, you're looking at 24-11, and it looked like the Rebels, with all the momentum, if they could just cut out some of those small errors, that they had the Blues a little bit with their back up against the wall. But I think I might be a little bit kind to the Rebels because I'm looking for some positivity in this weekend, which probably brings us on to our next game.
And there's how many former Force players are actually in that 23, Simo? That's where it really comes out, doesn't it?
Oh, you know, I would say one of the former Force players, Jake Strawn, really let the team down on one of the tries in the corner when the Blues managed just to stretch out the defense, and you saw Tupou desperately running to try and make the tackle, and Strawn just kind of looked at Tupou being like, oh, you've got that, and I really, really saw that he should have tried a bit harder there. So I guess we're glad we got rid of
him. I think if anyone in the back line looks at Taniela Tupou and says you can cover a line break from a winger in the corner, you've got to look at yourself and go, Taniela Tupou is probably not the player you want coming across in cover defense.
Well, actually, I do want to highlight one person that I did want to mention was Andrew Kellaway. Just about every single touch of the ball he had was absolute gold. He looked dangerous with every encounter, offloads all the time. He's really sucking in those defenders, and he is a real standout for this Rebels team at the moment.
Really looking forward to seeing him in Sky Blue at the Waratahs next year. But let's keep moving along. And Lockie, 28-33 to the Queensland Reds over the Crusaders. Mate, you must be ecstatic with this result.
Oh, we've got to say it's game of the round, not just because of my rampant bias, but more because of the unbelievable carry-on from the Sky Sport commentary team going through this one. I'm not sure if you managed to catch a little bit of the call going on as the game crept away from the Crusaders, but I've never seen a commentary box go so fervently against one team. Simo, I'm seeing some nods from your end. What was your take on how that second half in particular played out?
Oh, my Lord. They can whine and whinge, can't they? I mean, it's just good to know that when the shoe's on the other foot, that they're just as bad as we are. Because you do say you haven't seen a commentary team, but I do remind you of a few years back under the Fox Sports broadcast when we had a man by the name of Phil Kearns, who was pretty horrendous. But this was some unbelievable biased commentary. When we think of the rugby collisional incident, as I like to call it these days, where we had a bouncing ball and a little bit of a player clash with no real contact to the head, I thought it was adjudicated brilliantly by the referee team with a lot of pressure from the commentary team and a lot of angry Crusaders fans who are hoping for an opportunity to capitalize on something. But the carry on, it brought a smile to my face. It was nice to hear. It was nice to hear that we're not the only ones who whine and whinge.
It was delicious.
It's not just this game either. I really found that the Kiwi commentary across the weekend was quite poor. I found the Hurricanes and Waratahs game on Friday night very insufferable as a Waratahs fan, not only because the Tars were putting in such a poor effort on the field, but the commentators continued to put emphasis on how bad the Waratahs were. Multiple times in that first half, whoever was on the sideline would just say, oh, the Hurricanes are dominant here, and geez, this Waratahs team does not know what they are doing. Or that's just another mistake there by the Waratahs unforced. It's like, yeah, we get it. They're not playing well. But let's focus on one of the key areas of the game that's a little bit more exciting. Stop pooping on the opposition as much as you are. To see that it came across in the Crusaders game as well.
To be fair, they did mention Charlie Gamble and go, oh yeah, Charlie Gamble's playing well. He was a New Zealand born player.
Of course they did. Yeah, they keep their own. They definitely talk up their own, but that's it. So it was very refreshing to go into the Rebels game and hear Shawnee and Swaney and the Stan Sport commentary guys even it out a little bit more in our favour. But let's talk about the actual game itself instead of whinging about the commentary. Lockie, just the effort from this Reds pack to withstand the onslaught that the Crusaders put on in that second half to come out on top, really, really impressive. What was your key area or your key takeaway from this game?
Oh, it was pack defense. Absolutely, it was the forward pack's defense. So at the end of the day, Reds finish with far less than half the ball, 37% possession, and territory is pretty evenly split. So for the last 10 minutes, Crusaders have all the ball, 85% of possession, and particularly the back five in that pack. So I'm talking Ryan Smith, who put in another massive 80-minute performance, was excellent. But it was the return of Fraser McWright, coupled with Liam Wright, Harry Wilson, who went absolutely gangbusters. Together, they produced more than 60 tackles and 4 turnovers. Ryan Smith got through a mountain of work with 23-plus tackles himself, and it was just gutsy. I thought it was really gutsy effort, and it's that side that we've been lacking from the Reds these past few weeks, where they're putting themselves in a good position to win games, but they lack the guts and the finishing ability to get it done. The last week against the Blues was a perfect case in point. They tossed that away, and the Blues score 3 late tries. I thought the exact same thing was going to happen at this rate, but they managed to roll their sleeves up, show a bit of a tougher underbelly, and stoked for them to bust that hoodoo. I know all the commentary is going to come out about Junkyard Dog getting a couple of extra tries, and that's great to see because it's a good story. But Sunnyville barking is one of the worst things I've ever heard, as well as a quick takeaway from that first game. But yeah, I think that entire performance was built on real gutsiness from the pack.
Simo, we spoke last week on the podcast around Tim Ryan, and Lockie said he didn't want to sort of buy into it too much. But Les Kiss did name Tim Ryan in the, was it, I think, 14th jersey this weekend, put Sully on the bench. What? How did you think he went in his second stint at Super Rugby?
Woof, woof. That's all I have to say. The Junkyard Dog gets it in again. He is a wiry little winger that you just love to see out there on the field. He pops up in the right spot. He capitalizes on every bit of possession that he gets. Look, we're not going to be blowing too much smoke up, but I do think that he is definitely a talent. He is embracing every opportunity that is handed to him. And when we watch Vunivalu off the bench trying to do a charge down and flinching when he realizes the ball might actually touch him, we have to admit that the Junkyard Dog wouldn't do that. He would go straight for the ball and just...
I actually found myself thinking as the game wore on, when as Tim Ryan got more and more involved in the game, I was just sort of thinking back to some of the closer games over the past few seasons where Sully has been on the wing or has bombed opportunities for the Reds, even earlier in this year, and how having an out-and-out winger or a player who just has rugby nous running through his brain, through his blood, who just knows where to be at the right time. Not only is he popping up in attack to finish off great phase play that the Reds are setting up, but he's also showing up in defense and putting on massive hits to blokes nearly twice the size of him. So moving forward for the Queensland Reds, you would expect that Tim Ryan's going to get a lot more minutes and Sully's days in a Queensland jersey probably are numbered. Moving away from that, Lockie, you did speak earlier around the impact that both Fraser McWright and Harry Wilson had on the game. I mean, I just need to shout them out. Both of those guys are immense. We've got the Wallaby squad under, I nearly said Dave Rennie, Joe Schmidt later in the year. Harry Wilson is very, very, very quickly firming as the first choice number eight in Australia. What are your thoughts, boys?
Ooh, big call. You got Bobby Valentini, who's had that on lock for the past few years, but I like Harry. I mean, the hustle that he showed, particularly that 61st minute charge down, you're just starting to see the Crusaders come back into the game. Simo just raised it before. That effort ball to charge it down was incredible after what was a total non-try by Quinton Strange, if we can point that one out, where it didn't touch the bloody line. But that amount of hustle and extra...
Wasn't that Barrett?
Was it Barrett or Strange? I can't remember. They all look the same. They're big and meaty. And another big meaty boy, Harry Wilson, goes over, charges down, gets over. It was just a great moment in that game. It typifies that sort of that gutsy side of, that we've seen constantly from Super Rugby. And now it's all that, the transition, you know, can he do it at test level? That's been the debate since 2020. Simo, do you reckon that debate's going to be put to bed this year?
Yeah. I think one of the big things we got to remember is that we haven't really seen the best of Harry Wilson at a Wallabies Gold. And likewise, I'd say we haven't seen the best of Fraser McWright. And I think with these last couple of weeks would really highlight is that they have such continuity together, cohesion theory, if we're going to have to bang that old drum every single time. But they just know where each other are. They pop up next to each other. And without them being together, I don't think we can ever really judge them at Gold. I think what we really need to see is Wilson work on his jumping a little bit more, because we could always go for a Valentini and Wilson duo, but we need that line-out threat. And I think Wilson, you know, he does jump in the line-out, and I have heard him highlight before on Raw Rugby podcast that it's some area that he's trying to work on. But it becomes a really difficult one, because I'd say side by side, I'd say Valentini probably offers a little bit more at the moment. But when you see that the benefits that Wilson can actually offer to another player like McWright and potentially Tate McDermott in there, we can see such a connection between the back row and the halves combo coming out of Queensland if we see that represent at a Wallabies level. But Lockie, I think you have one more thing that you want to sign us off with for the Reds besides a bunch of barking.
Oh, aside from the barking, the player that's flown under the radar this year and would love to throw up in Wallaby squad contention, Jock Campbell. Mm. He had an absolute blinder against the Crusaders. Everyone talks about, you know, Timmy Ryan, Hunter Paisami, his 50th was gutsy, but Jock Campbell made how many defenders beaten? Seven at the end of the day. He was so elusive and really good at just beating the first defender on the counter and getting front foot ball. I think that It ties into what you were talking about with Tim Ryan, Simo. You know, for so long, Australia has looked at trying to get athletes and turn them into rugby players. Players like Tim Ryan and Jock Campbell are out-and-out rugby players, and it's about nurturing them and developing them so they're physically prepared for test footy. I would love to see that explored further down the line. But that's enough of me crapping on about the Reds. Mitch, steer us away.
Yeah, mate. Let's keep moving. The next game was the Western Force over in Waikato or Hamilton against the Chiefs. 56-7 was the final score there. Leading into this game, it was nearly everything set up for the Western Force as possible. It was May the 4th. It was Star Wars Day. And yet the Force just did not take the opportunity. 56-7, absolute field day by the men from Hamilton. What happened to the Western Force?
Well, you know, we can say all of these things that it was May the 4th, but we all know that the Empire Strikes Back ends on a horrible cliffhanger for our heroes, and they pull through at the end. No, but with a bit of seriousness, it just wasn't good enough by the Western Force. They came out there. I think the Chiefs wanted to go out and really display big performance, because there's a lot of questions starting to float around whether they are actually in contention for making the finals, and it was a real statement victory from them. Perhaps we're seeing that the Western Force is not benefiting from having Tinder restriction, as Simon Cron has put out there. Perhaps they need some local support out there in order to make him step up for these big games. It was not a good night to be a Western Force fan. I'd kind of reached my threshold of watching rugby with my girlfriend kind of harassing me a little bit. So I watched the first 10 or so minutes of this one and quickly decided that it was a game I could potentially just half watch on my phone. So we were watching some kind of documentary whilst I glanced down at my phone every now and then and winced with pain. It was not easy viewing for a Western Force fan at all. Did you catch this one, Lockie, at all, or were you saved from the pain and busy celebrating a Reds victory?
I watched bits and pieces, but I think I was in a similar situation to you and was happily dragged away from this one. Because honestly, just watching the frontline defensive effort was disappointing. I know the Chiefs are stacked with attacking weapons and big bodies, but to concede 13 line breaks isn't good enough at the end of the day. And I was really disappointed with that first up tackle, just the first up collision point and being able to sit a Chiefs defender back down rather than letting them bend the line or having those passive tackles that we see so often. So that was a bit of a letdown for me. There are still some bright sparks in the fourth season, like Hamish Stewart, who continues to just be rock solid, I feel, and is never the sort of player that gets the credit he probably deserves, anchoring down that 12 jumpers, particularly defensively. I don't think he missed any of his 17 tackles in this game. But yeah, splitting hairs. It's hard to pull too much good out of this. Mitch, what have you got for us?
I've got a question for Simo as the resident Force fan on the podcast. If we look at the team that played last week against the Highlanders, 7-6 was the score there, and that was a really, really tough watch. Both teams were trying to not lose that game as opposed to win it. Coming off even the week before that, they beat the Crusaders at home, going from such a high to that game in Dunedin to this performance in Waikato. How do you think, what do you think has caused this sort of shift from the Western Force this season? They've been so good at home, and again, like they did last year, when they play away, they just don't show up.
Yeah, look, it's a huge amount of inconsistency when it comes to the Western Force, but we're quite used to that as Western Force fans. Look, the fortress at home has become a bit of a saying, but I think it hasn't been as impenetrable this season as it was last season. I think we only lost the one game last season to the Chiefs, actually, towards the end of the season. It's very frustrating. It's really hard to put your finger down on things. We did see an immediate impact when we got Beal coming into the team, and I think a little bit of his impact. And he was good in this game as well, and injecting himself from behind quite well throughout the team. But it's hard to say, isn't it? I mean, I guess if we look at it logically, we'd say the Crusaders, you know, they aren't the most challenging teams this year. And with the added benefit of being able to play them from home, I think the Force were able to come on top of that. And the Crusaders haven't been too challenging in the set piece. And I think that's where the Western Force have been struggling a little bit more so in the scrum department than the line out. The Highlanders, you know, that's kind of what you'd expect. 6-7, it's neither team are exactly highlight people. Both of them are really hoping to make the top eight. So as you're saying, neither of them want to lose it. So they're really trying to try and capitalize on it. But this week was just something else for the Western Force. It looked like both game plans had gone out the window of a bit more of a run it with the Crusaders and a bit more gritty when they came to the Highlanders. And they weren't gritty and they didn't run it very much. So I can't really give you too much direction. But I guess I can provide the positivity that I promised earlier on in the podcast of me laying in bed at night trying to figure out something. And it's the Force will always go on. You know, there's no quick fixes when it comes to rugby. We know this. We've seen coaches sacked. We've seen lots of turnover in high up positions. I think with we're looking at the Western Force, they really are trying to make a difference from the ground up. We're seeing changes in the club rugby system. We're seeing a CEO who's long-term pointed in, who's been making huge development in the women's game. And we're seeing a lot of Wallaroos from Western Force, which we haven't seen before. We know that no matter what happens with RA, the Western Force will continue. RA, we don't know that right now, but the Western Force will create our own comp. We'll continue going on. We'll wave the flag of Australian rugby. So you know what? We may have not won this game, but we'll never die. And that's the one positive I can give you as a Western Force fan. We'll keep coming back.
Timo, when you actually look across the 23 that the Western Force named and some of the other players that they have on their books who might not actually just be making the match day at the moment, Tom Horton, Santiago Medrano, Will Harris, Carlo Tizzano, Ben Donaldson, Bailey Kunzel, Curtly Beal, Hamish Stewart, Isaac Rodder, Michael Wells, Max Bury. Like, these guys have a lot of talent, and that is a pretty good side on paper, but it's just not transferring onto the field. What do you think it is at the moment about the Force that they're just not able to gel as a unit and put in a real cohesive performance? Because when you actually go back and look at the prep that the Western Force have done in the offseason from 23 to 24, they probably had the best preparation of any of the Aussie super sides. They went to South Africa and played the Cheetahs in a four-game home and away season. Waratahs didn't do that. Melbourne Rebels went to Japan for a few games. The Reds went to Japan for a few games. They probably had the best amount of game time with the least amount of representation in a Wallaby squad, yet it's not transferring into the 2024 season.
Yeah, I think they use that tour as a good opportunity to try and develop some depth. You'll see a lot of players that showed up on that tour that haven't necessarily shown up in the Force 23 this year. I think you also have to recognize that there's been a lot of turnover in some key positions through injuries and otherwise. I mean, we've only really just returned to our full lock stocks and having to bring in some injury cover halfway through. We're seeing Beal starting to really kind of gel a little bit more with his backline combination. I do think we're lacking a little bit in the outside back department, to be honest. I think Harry Potter's injury really did have more of an impact on the Western Force than we realized. And he was quite a smooth operator. And we would really give to have him on one wing with Beal at the back and able to provide that little bit of authority at the back there. Not to say that we haven't been doing quite well with Kunzel on the wing. He's starting to really develop himself as a bit of a hodge player, I'd say. He can pop up in most positions, it seems, and do quite well. And be quite consistent in that department. But, you know, as I was trying to say before with the Western Force, it's no quick fixes for things. I think there actually is some reasons to be a little bit excited to see what's going on. The Force have had some excellent signings, as we just said. Darcy Swain coming back. Joining the Force. BPA coming back to Australian rugby. Also seeing, I had him in my notes before, the mullet man who's represented
Nick Dolly
before as a hooker. Yes, Dolly's and coming across.
If I'm not mistaken, Tunkelly Nairavoro is on the book somewhere in Western Australia. Why are we not seeing him play?
Yes, he is. He's in fat camp, from my understanding. Okay. He's been playing some Premier games. I've been looking at the Premier games coming out and looking at imagining an overweight Nairavoro running at you is not something you'd be enjoying as a mate who's probably just wanted to have a beer on a Saturday and playing out in the West Australian sun. So unlucky for that fella. I mean, if he makes it in, he'll make it in. We've had a bit of a heat wave in Perth, so I really thought a few of the pounds would have shed it off. But if Cronny says he's not ready, then I suppose the man's making some suburban dad unhappy on the weekend.
I think we've spoken a fair bit about this game. Lockie, is there any last comments you wanted to make before we shift across to the Brumbies and Drua?
No, I'm just giggling at some poor subbies bloke getting robbed by Dunkelly.
It's a great image. And Stan Sport, if you've got any footage, please share it on your socials because we would all – Love to see that. So let's finish off the round with the men down in Canberra getting the job done, 28-20 to the Brumbies against the Fijian Drua. Now, this game had quite a lot of fire to it. The Drua showed up. 28-20 was the final score there, and the Drua had a few tries disallowed in this one. So ultimately, the final score could have been a lot closer than it ended up being. But again, the Brumbies machine does roll on. They did get the Chockies, and they were able to get into the top four of the Super Rugby standings, which we'll look through in a moment. Simo, did you get to watch much of this game, and what were your sort of thoughts of the home team, the Brumbies?
Yeah, so the Brumbies came out to a massive lead at halftime, with it being 21-3, and looked to have all the game but sewed up and ready to send off in the mail. But the Drua came back quite fiercely. We did see a yellow card to Vella at 51 minutes on the Brumbies. It was good to see Alan Alatoa out there and scoring a try, and Ikitau out there as well with his double, I think it was, wasn't it? Just checking. Yeah, he scored two tries on the weekend. And I think they've been sorely missed, honestly. You can see that Len Ikitau and Alan Alatoa out there really do add a little bit more depth when it comes to the forward pack and the backs for the Brumbies. But yeah, strange game. The Brumbies' discipline looked completely out of sorts, which is a little bit dysregular to how they usually play. You saw a 17-9 penalty count for the home team, which, you know, honestly, with a 17-9 penalty count, it's no wonder it was a close game in the end, because the Drua really looked like they could snatch that one up.
Lockie, what were your thoughts, I guess, on the Drua and how they attacked this Brumbies set piece this week?
Set piece one was interesting. I don't think I've got a particularly good read, because I only watched the mini and wasn't able to look at all of them, but I really enjoy the way that the Drua scrum is becoming a bit more of a weapon. Whether it came to the fore massively in this game, I couldn't say, but teams are taking it a lot more seriously. I remember the chatter around the Drua when they first came in, it was all about, oh, look how, you know, amazing they are with ball in hand, look at the counter attack, but the set piece wasn't considered a strength. They lost two lineouts, which was a shame, but their scrum was rock solid. They won all 12 of their scrums, and I'm pretty sure they forced two penalties as well.
Yep.
So I really like what I'm starting to see up front, and especially with players like Masiki Donga, who's just a monster. Tavino Kanaveri remains one of the goat hookers, I think, in Super Rugby Pacific since this iteration. He's so clean on his throw, and they've got lots of upside to those bigger bodies up front, but I actually thought that their ruck defense and their ball security was appalling, the Drua. The Brumbies penalized themselves almost off the park, but the Drua conceded 10 turnovers at ruck time. And particularly players like Jerome Brown during the first half, and then Lukey Reimer when he came on in the second, I think they both finished up with two turnovers. And they were pivotal to stopping so much of that Drua momentum that they were getting from their good set-piece ball. It was all bang straight over the pill, and that first clear out from the Drua was really lacking at the moment.
There's been a bit of talk from the Drua coaching staff for the past few seasons, really, that the rub of the green doesn't often go their way. I don't know if you boys have seen on social media Wildcard, the famous fire up merchant on Instagram and YouTube, put a story out last night on the try that the number 9 Penny Matawalu was disallowed. In the process of going over, he dropped the ball. Wildcard seems to think in his little Instagram story that the try should have stood. Yes, he dropped the ball, but he never had actual separation from the wrist down to his forearm. He kept that on the ball, and so there was downward pressure. It should have been awarded. It was overturned. That would have got the Drua up within striking range of the Brumbies, and at the final score, 20-28, would have final. Potentially, I mean, he scored next to the post, so you would have thought it would have been 27-28 at the end of it. Do you think there is something to be said about the way that the Drua are sometimes officiated as opposed to the Aussie or the Kiwi sides?
I'd have to go back and have a look at the penalty stat sheets from every Drua game going back to when they first came into the comp. It's hard to base it off a game, especially when they were up 17-9 on the penalty count. I don't think you can say that you're really against the rub of the green when the referee has so clearly been penalising the other team, whether it's for their indiscretions or your dominance at times. It gets blown up a little bit. We saw down in Melbourne the reaction from the draw in that loss to the Rebels, where both Drua and Frank Lomani were both red carded. There was a big fallout from that around, you know, we're treated differently. And I think we need to go back and chew off every single game and rewatch how it's officiated to get a better understanding, because otherwise it's just broad strokes and generalization that doesn't help anyone.
Yeah, I think, we're all diehard rugby fans here and we watch most of the games throughout the weekend, but to a generalist fan who's maybe an AFL or an NRL fan or a soccer fan for that matter that tunes in every now and then and watches the game of rugby, there are trends that are forming in games that are not consistently officiated. If we look at this round specifically, as we spoke in the Crusaders and the Reds game, that try to Scott Barrett or the other second rower, Strange, whoever it was, that got awarded when it didn't technically touch the grass, it didn't go down, that's awarded through a process of a TMO looking at it and still awarding it. Yet at the Fijian and Drua one, the opposite. There's probably a try there because there's no separation. The ball's clearly grounded, yet they've called it a knock on. So both things called differently. You can see why there is frustration from fans across the competition when similar events are adjudicated differently and can potentially determine the outcome of a game when they are as tight as they are.
Yeah, absolutely. But you always say it's kind of a part of the game. I mean, I guess that's the lame excuse we use, but there is always going to be a human factor when it comes to these games. I mean, you can point to the force, not that it would have made much of a difference, but there was a try that most certainly Rona, I believe it was,
very clearly
out in touch. It's not going to make a huge difference to the game. So it's always disappointing to see when you see a lot of these things that might not necessarily need to go under the microscope, going under the microscope, but when it comes to the big decisions, they don't seem to come through. But I think, as like you said, you can't really make too much of a comment when it comes to any kind of discrimination against the drawer until you can really knuckle in and look at
highlight
the
a
details,
few areas where
otherwise
you can,
you're just making.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're just making wide sweeping claims, and it's really hard, and it just kind of, you know, throws fire in both ends of the camp, and it's not what you really want to see, and what the communication surrounding the game afterwards is going to be. But for else for that, I was going to say on what Lucky said with the set piece for the draw. I mean, they scored a maul try against the Brumbies, which you know, it's just great to see that we're seeing the draw develop in a few different areas, and a few scrum penalties and Kura volley popping off the side of a Brumbies scrum that was under pressure and managing the score. Which I might just put out in general, I'm quite surprised we haven't seen more of Kura volley from the draw, especially with his amazing kicking skills that he put the Wallabies out at the World Cup, which we've all tried to forget about. But I haven't seen too much of him, so it was good to see him come off the bench and have some good impact there.
Yeah, I was really expecting, once Frank Lomani did get that red card and has got subsequent a ban and minutes on the sideline for whatever it was, however many rounds that he is out, I was expecting Kuravoli to be this first choice nine coming in for the draw. But the fact that he is still coming off the bench, maybe it is more of a tactical thing from Byrne and his coaching staff, that he likes the impact that he brings off the bench and wants to finish games with a bit of sort of passion and increase that tempo.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I guess we'll never know. How about you get Ando in here to hook up a nice little interview so we can get to the bottom of that one.
Feature. Yeah, we need a feature.
All right.
Absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely.
We need to get to the bottom of that. So let's look at the overall table after 11 rounds of Super Rugby.
Well, I think we've missed just one game. Not that we're going to jump into it too much, but the Moana Pacifica and the Highlanders game. Did we touch on that one at all, just giving the score out there?
It was a snore fest.
It was.
Yeah, 17
to the Highlanders in the wet. I mean, the one thing that was great to see, actually two things I will say before we move on, is the kits. Both teams wearing a heritage kit of some description. I don't know where the Moana heritage kit comes from, considering their first ever kit did not look anything like the kit they were playing in this week. But great to see the collar for both jerseys and the Hurricanes getting to wear that 1998-97 kit that they've worn in the past. But this game was played in Tonga, and the scenes from the crowd and the way that the community gets behind the Moana Pacifica team was just incredible to see.
It's so cool over there in Nuku'alofa. Like, the Aussie A game against Tonga last year had such incredible atmosphere, and it looked like it was just the same amount. Like you had the Highlanders in Moana going through local schools. They went back to Falafa Katava's high school from the Highlanders. Moana do such great Pacifica engagement. And those are the moments where I sort of sit back and think, why aren't they based out in the islands? Like, I know it's a logistical nightmare, but it clearly means so much to these communities rather than being, you know, shipped all across sort of the North Island, New Zealand, trying to find a home. There is a clear spiritual home.
And like six blokes show
yeah,
up.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. Like six that blokes game. The game against the Rebels in Hamilton, and they're like a handful. Oh. Like it's that's so devastating when you see the flip side of that, and it's a full Telfiber Stadium in Nuku'alofa, and entire crowds doing you know civvy towers together. It was awesome. It was so good to see. And bring back the collars, like all the classic heritage kits that have been rolled out this past week from the New Zealanders. Mwah. Give us stripes. I want to see the big four swirl in yellow and black, Simo.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm enjoying seeing all the jerseys coming out. Actually, mind you, speaking about jerseys, the under-20s one was actually quite nice that they went straight with the Indigenous style jersey as their main strip, which was really nice to see. I think people have been shouting for years that it should just be on main strip because it's it pays a lot of homage to our country and it's really nice to see.
Get it in.
On the themes of jerseys, did you boys see the release this week that the Wallabies 2024 playing kit has been released? Almost very sneakily snuck out there by ASIC, not a whole lot of fanfare around it. And to be honest, not a whole lot of design element into those jerseys. If I'm being completely honest, very boring, complete rehash of the World Cup kit. Not a fan.
They're pretty similar,
I didn't see it. It's very disappointing to hear that that's the review. Speaking of the World Cup jersey, I did manage to get one as an absolute steal, something like 60 or 70% off because nobody wanted it. So I was seeing if I could pick the stitching out and get rid of the France 2024 and just make it a regular Wallabies jersey. But, you know, maybe in a few years' time, it'll be one that we laugh and look back and say, ha-ha, how far we've come and look at us back on top.
Yes, very much so. Well, let's keep moving and I will try and get a link to you to have a look at those jerseys, Simo, and get your thoughts on it a little bit later. But let's look at the ladder and where it sits after 11 rounds of Super Rugby. So we have Hurricanes in first place on 42 points, followed very closely by the Blues on 41 points in second. ACT Brumbies are third on 35 points. How great to see at this point of the competition Australian side in the top three. Absolutely incredible. Let's keep moving. Number four, Chiefs on 33 points. Number five, Queensland Reds on 27 points. And sixth place, Melbourne Rebels on 24. If it's awesome to have one team in the top three, how good is it to have three teams in the top six? How awesome is that from an Australian rugby perspective? Seventh place, Highlanders on 19 points. Eighth place, Fiji and Drew on 17 points. Ninth place, Moana Pacifica on 14 points. 10th place, Crusaders on 13 points. 11th place, the Waratahs on 12 points. And unfortunately, Western Force in 12th on 10 points. Any thoughts quickly on the standings or the top eight as they currently sit, gentlemen, before we look at round 12?
Reds win the comp.
Well, I'll hop in. I'll let you go. Lockie's got his one catchphrase, the Reds winning the comp. yeah, I was going to say, I mean, look, it looks good for now, but we're going to see what happens in these last few rounds here. I'm not sure. I'm confident the Rebels are going to stay up there. They've got some really challenging matches coming up. The Brumbies, likewise, in the top three, they've got a few. Oh, actually, no, they just did have a few big games. So hopefully they can stay up high. But I'm not really too sure how it's going to develop moving forward. I think it might be a reflection on seasons past where we end up a little bit disappointed by the top eight. But for now, we can keep our fingers crossed and it's looking good.
Lockie, before you jumped on the podcast, both Simo and I were chatting around the Crusaders, currently in 10th place, but almost getting into their groove and finding the form at the right time of the season. If you were the Hurricanes and you played the Crusaders in 8th place come the first round of the finals and you lost, how frustrated would you be?
Oh, you'd be absolutely blowing up. You'd be flipping tables in Hurricanes HQ, and rightly so. Like, it opens up a broader conversation about the finals format that we've had ad nauseum, and I know that most punters have, whether it's in our Discord, whether it's just chatting on your with your mates or on a group chat, stuff like that. Something needs to change around the way that it's attacked. Whether that's with the next broadcast deal, whether it's with changing in teams, if that happens in the future. A top eight is unsustainable, especially when you have teams with a losing record, which we've seen all the way up to number six in the past two iterations. I don't think that's a good reflection of how we want to reward teams and how we want to, I guess, frame finals footy as being the best of the best. Because at the moment, we've got Fiji and Drua with a 4-6 record who can conceivably still slip in with one or two wins in the last four rounds. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just being salty about it, but I don't know why I'd be, because my teams are never good enough to be at the top anyway at this point.
Oh, I think you're onto something. It definitely ruins the integrity of the competition where, you know, if we did see, we all laugh about it, but, you know, it wouldn't be too far-fetched if the Crusaders slip into eighth for them to just, Crusaders going to start seeding and just push their way through to the final. And I mean, we'd all be heartbroken to see it, but we wouldn't necessarily be super surprised. I mean, thinking back even on the weekend with the Queensland Reds versus Crusaders, they looked very close to just snatching that victory away from the Reds in the last 10 minutes. And a few of us in the Discord started panicking a little bit after it looked like they were about to get a couple of consecutive tries very quickly back to back. Luckily, the Queensland Reds defense held on, and maybe a penalty that was a little bit kind in their favor, as the New Zealand commentary team would love to continue to push on. But who knows? But I do think that they do need to have a look at this, because the top eight is just not sustainable for the integrity of the competition.
The only one thing I would say in defense of the top eight is that if we were top six or even top four at this point, if the Waratahs, the Crusaders, Moana, or Fiji and Drua, if it's a top six, your season's over at this point. So for the next, what do we got, four or five rounds of the competition, you're not playing for anything. At least with an eight-team final series, mathematically, the Western Force, the Waratahs, Crusaders, and Moana could all, if they won all the rest of their games, make the top eight. So it at least keeps teams in the fight a lot longer, and it comes down to that last round of competition of who's going to make the eight, which team's going to play finals, which is exciting for fans. If that's not the case, as a Waratahs fan, you switch straight back to AFL by round five because your season's over.
It's very complimentary to Australian rugby and maintaining eyes on the television for the last few rounds. You're 100% right about that one. But, you know, are we trying to get people watching because we want to see the Australian teams just scrape in for the sake of a tagline that says finals? Or do we want to have a competition which is actually built on earning your spot in the finals? And, you know, it's a debate for another time, I think.
I mean, at the end of the day, too, it comes down to revenue. And with an eight teams final series, another two teams get to host a final. And so then they get the gate takings and the viewership and that sort of thing. But anyway, we're not in the boardroom. We're not on the broadcast. We don't get to make these decisions. Let's quickly run through round 13 of... Wait, are we up to round 12 or round 13 next week?
We are up to round 12, isn't it?
Oh, it's 12. It's definitely 12.
It was 12. We just had
11. We did just have 11. So have I? I've got the wrong team.
You're the wrong one up. I've got them available if you want me to run through them.
Yes, you do that, Simo. Otherwise, we'll be previewing a team.
Yep. So on the Friday night, kicking us all off, we've got Moana Pacifica up against the Chiefs. Following up from there, we have the Reds versus the Rebels. After that, on the Saturday, we have the first game being the Blues versus the Hurricanes, which is going to be an absolute belter of a game to watch. After that, we have the Highlanders and Crusaders, Waratahs and Brumbies, which will be another good game to watch from the Australian rugby perspective. And then the Force and the Fijian Drua. So I was just listing off of those. But boys, which one is the game that you're highlighting as the game of the round? Let's start with you, Lockie. What are you looking forward to watching this
game? It's got to be Canes Blues. That's going to be such a good game. That's 1v2, two incredible teams, even though they're from New Zealand, that probably decides at this point the minor premiership, you've got to say. Like, those are your informed teams firing on all cylinders, and I think that's going to give us a pretty good indication of who finishes top of the pops, and more importantly, sort of who is going to be framing as the dominant front row. I think that those have been the standout packs so far this season. So players seeing like the likes of Tuonga Fasi and Angus Taubo come up against players like Xavier Numea, Poirier Rackety Stones, Tyrell Lomax is the one I was thinking of. Those are your premier front rowers, and that's going to be massive. So for the piggies up front like me who love a bit of a scrum, I think that's going to be one hell of a game.
Yeah, absolutely. And for yourself, Mitch, as a Waratahs fan, are you thinking that you're going to bounce back and take it to the Brumbies? Or do you think the form of the Brumbies coming to this is just going to be much too strong for the old mind? Waratahs.
Well, first of all, I need to apologize to everyone on the podcast because I said earlier that the Waratahs were going over to Western Force to play the men in blue over in Perth, and that's happening the week after. So apologies for that little slip up there. I looked a week too early. Can I be a little bit difficult here or a bit different from the podcast and say I think the match of the round is going to be the Wallaroos against Canada on Saturday afternoon? I think that's going to be an absolute ripper. Really looking forward to seeing how the Wallaroos fare against a really red-hot Canadian side at the moment. First test under Joe Yap too. So much to look forward to there. That's probably being a little bit unfair to Super Rugby. This is what we're focusing on at the moment. So I'm going to go as my match of the round.
Personally, all I see is... All I hear is you avoiding talking about the Waratahs and the Brumbies game. So I think that says enough. But continue on with your match of the round.
It's definitely not going to be the Waratahs and Brumbies. That's going to be a cricket score to the Brumbies, if anything, from last week. I think it's going to be Reds and Rebels from an Australian perspective. I think that's going to be a really cool competition to see. Both teams in the top six. The Rebels have lost a little bit of form in the past few weeks. And so if they can find that again, they're going to be up for this one. Earlier in the season, they held with the Reds in Melbourne when that was played there, and that was a really great game. Came back early in the second half, but the Reds did run away with it at the end there. Taniela Tupou going back to Suncorp to play the Reds in a Melbourne Rebels kit. I mean, hopefully he plays big minutes, has a big impact. But yeah, really looking forward to seeing how those two Aussie sides can bash each other.
Yeah, I'm going to have to personally back Lockie in and say the Blues versus the Hurricanes. I think objectively is going to be a brilliant game of rugby. The New Zealand Derby is always put on a really good show, and especially when we're looking at first versus second place. But I do think that the Australian games look like they could be quite interesting. The Waratahs versus Brumbies, although we're expecting probably a big score by the Brumbies, the Waratahs always do find a way to lift up against the Brumbies. They do have Tar Week and Brumby Week on both sides. So I'm thinking it will probably be a bit closer than we expect. An Australian rugby really fan, so. I'd like to see the Brumbies absolutely run away with it so that they can maintain the third place. I mean, I'd hate to see the Waratahs win. No offense to you and the rest of the New South Welshmen, but I think we know what value it adds to you to be able to get those home finals, and we really do want to see the Brumbies stick to those top four positions. But yeah, Blues and Canes for me, I think that's just going to be an absolute belter of a game. Hopefully both sides lift up and we don't see any players rested and they both front up with their full sides. And although, mind you, the Hurricanes have been doing an amazing job with lots of players rotating through. Yeah. Just real quickly, boys, how do we feel about all these games on a Saturday, four games on a Saturday? I'm missing the Sunday game, something to do on then. I find it a bit hard to try and sit through all four games on a Saturday.
Yeah, it really is a lot of rugby. It would be good to see a game or two shifted across to that Sunday afternoon slot. In terms of a podcast perspective, it might make it hard for us to cover everything before we record on a Sunday evening, but from a... just a broadcast perspective, that Sunday afternoon spot is just giving free air to both the NRL and the AFL. So I think in future years, if we can get a game at least played on a Sunday afternoon, I think that works. We've seen throughout the past few years when the Waratahs or the Brumbies or the Reds play an afternoon game, Saturday or Sunday, the families turn up. And so the crowds generally look a lot better. So it seems to fit the pundits a fair bit better as
well. Surely we can bump Antics Roadshow of 9 Gem or something on like Sunday 3 p.m. There's got to be better things to fill that slot as far as a bit of Arvo footy is concerned.
Oh, that's, mate, you don't want to upset those. You don't want to set up those old folk who love Antics Roadshow. There's a lot of them hanging around. There's
and
a lot
of nursing homes
that tune into
that. Found the Antics Roadshow.
Yeah. Toss their sponge in the sea.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So does that wrap us up, boys? Anyone want to touch on any others?
One thing we do, I will bring up before we move off. The next round is Culture Round for Super Rugby Pacific. So that we have seen already, the Brumbies have released their Indigenous jersey that they'll be wearing against the Waratahs. Hopefully the Waratahs follow suit and wear their away strip or the Indigenous jersey for there. And yeah, I guess just across the competition, there should hopefully be some cool jerseys thrown out for this culture round to make it work. Lockie, you've just put a great little comment in our chat. Thoughts on Wallaroo's team that's going to face Canada and any debutants there?
Yeah, I'm just...
What are your thoughts, Lockie?
No, I just thought it'd be a good one to finish on because I know we just pumped through Super Rugby and there's been so much on, but Pack 4 has really snuck up on us. You know, we gave heaps of airtime to Super W final. I thought, oh, this is great. And then 2 weeks later, bang, we're into test season. So I thought just to round out over these last minute or so, I want to love to get a tip from you both about a debutant who could potentially come into this team, especially you, Simo, because there were some amazing performances coming out of the Force this year, and some of those players are really shining. Mitch, I'm going to start with you, though. Give Simo a bit of time to think. Mitch, who do you see popping into that Wallaroos 23 to face Canada?
Caitlin Hulse, that's my bolter for this 23. If she doesn't start in the 15 jersey, at least she comes off the bench. I think she's had an incredible Super W season this year for the Waratahs. You'd be very hard-pressed to not see a back three of Desi Miller, Caitlin Hulse, and Maya Stewart. Those three have been incredible for the Waratahs this year. I don't think anyone else across the Aussie landscape has come close to the impact and just the cohesion element that the three of them bring into a Wallabies team who's only had a week or so of together. I would not be surprised to see Joe Yap go with that combination.
Totally agree. I think they've been guns. Simo, hit us.
Look, you've absolutely thrown me on the spot.
Sorry, mate.
Oh, I was going to say, you put me on the spot, mate. I have not been watching the women's rugby this year very much at all. I've caught a few of the Force games, but not familiar enough to be throwing any names out there. It's just really good to see the development on the Western Force perspective. I was actually having a bit of a chat with Mitch prior to the podcast starting, and I'm going, oh, God, I don't know how you boys do it. There's so much rugby in a weekend to watch that I can't even get through all the men's rounds of Super Rugby, let alone the sevens and the under-20s tournaments, throwing in the women's in there. Look, I'm a big supporter of the women's rugby. I'll watch the games as they come on, but I can't say that I can provide too much insight on what I'm seeing from a Bolter perspective.
Who was the scrum half included from the Western Force?
Well, that's Sammy Wood. I've been guessing her up.
That was Samantha Wood.
Yeah, we've been guessing her up all season, actually, because she's been so great off the tee. And just her short passing game around the ruck's been excellent. But I think just from a Force perspective, and I'll jump in on Simo's behalf, I'm thinking Herabab Malcolm-Heke. She was so good at set piece time, coming in as a bit of a more seasoned player, coming in through the Force, and she's been gunned. They've only named two hookers in that official squad as well. So there's maybe a few on the development side, but having Malcolm-Heke come off the back of a really big Force season, particularly where she's like fronted up against established test players, Tanya Naden, Ash Masters, Tiana Malloy, Maddie Shark of the Reds. Like, there's been good front rowers that she's had to wrangle with, and more often than not, she comes out on top. So I'd love to see a dominant scrummaging hooker that the Wallaroos can put on. I think that'd be a huge get for us. So plenty to look forward to, Mitch.
And last question before we move off and finish the podcast. Lockie, where do you start Ash Masters?
Seven. M. Chance on our pod. Chance on our pod the other week said it. And who am I to disagree with Chancey on a seven number? So I reckon we'll back her there and see her as a very aggressive fetcher.
That would be awesome. Yeah, very keen. Very keen. So Saturday afternoon, that game kicks off Allianz Stadium. It's a doubleheader with the Waratahs and Brumbies game. So if you are Sydney-based, make sure you get there. Support the girls. It's going to be incredible to see them kick off their international season for 2024 and go up against Canada for the first game of Pac 4 this year. Gents, I think that brings us to the end of the podcast. Simo, thanks for joining us all the way over from the West.
Oh, that's all right, mate. It was good to come in there. The old Discord moderator who usually just tells people off, actually being able to have a chance to speak up and say hello to everyone. So, hello. Everyone, and it's been a little bit of a shameless plug of the Discord once more, but it's good to pop on and have a little bit of a discussion from the West perspective, because it's always lucky on the pod. So
brilliant.
Whenever you need me, boys, I'm always here.
Awesome. And Lockie, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure. It's like meeting the Wizard of Oz, having Simo on. It's like controlling everything behind the scenes. It's fantastic.
Someone's got to do it. All right. Thanks, gents. Thanks, everyone, for getting to this point in the podcast. We'll be back next week to wrap up Super Rugby Pacific, the first game of the Pac-4 series for the Wallaroos. Really, really looking forward to that one. Can't wait. We will be back then. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.